It is harsh across the Empire, whoredom rife, a gene age, a machine age, mankind is riven, a restless age, a deathless age, before the nine worlds go headlong. Welcome to episode 15 of the Vikings and Valkyries podcast. Joining us to face the end of the world are Bill, Steve, CJ, Taylor, and Anina. Welcome to you, morsels of meaning.
Hi.
Ooh, morsels.
Thank you very much. What does the last bit mean?
We're going to get chopped to bits, obviously.
Yeah, I don't like the sound of that. I have a question for Taylor. The armor you have on the rack behind you, is do you put it there when you can steam press it? Is that what that's
exactly
for?
Yeah, you know, wrinkles down. It wrinkles if I keep it in a crate.
In a drawer or whatever.
I've been literally staring at it.
Me too. Yeah.
You're a Lord of the Rings fan, right? I think I heard that from an
Massive
episode, right?
One, yeah.
Yeah. So this is
I have a Lord of the Rings wedding in November. So yes.
Beautiful. I know CJ wanted me to tell the story, but this is a basically screen accurate recreation I did of the Rohan Royal Guard armor. It is all full steel. It's 70 pounds of solid weight, and I got to wear it at Comic-Con, where I met Sir Richard Taylor and a bunch of the other Weta Workshop guys.
Seriously?
Wearing this, having him talk to me about it. We had a party where there was a costume contest where they judged it, and I did win. And then I just kind of decided, screw it, shoot my shot. I was there for work, and we were interviewing them the next day, and I just said, you know what, you guys are doing a panel, wouldn't it be really cool if someone in armor walked you guys onto the panel stage at Comic-Con? And they're like, fuck yes, do it. And so I got to walk the Weta guys onto their stage in that armor. It was dream come true.
Wonderful. Oh, fantastic.
I love the Rohan armor, so beautiful.
That's my favorite. I'm a Rohan fanboy. My I call them my illiterate horse boys.
Very good. Now, I've also seen you creating a Viking commercial where the commoners surrender their valuables just at the mere sight of Vikings because their marketing was so good. And I'm fairly sure that CJ, you were on the riverbank there. Was that right with the chest?
I was indeed.
Villager number Terrified. Two. Yeah, what? that was funny. You had a great idea, CJ, that the whole thing about Vikings is it's really their marketing. It's just the fear that goes before them. And at that time, we were running a marketing company together, and we thought, what a good way to advertise it and play to his strengths. And he did a great job running away from the scary Viking boats and tripping over himself and not overacting at all.
The arm movements were, I think, poignant.
They were so lifelike and realistic and not hammy in any way, shape, or form.
Anina, we've got you back with us again today. You've been laying to rest your saga as saga for Bardic Quest, right?
Yes. Season one of Bardic Quest is now concluded, and it's fantastic finale episode. A lot of tears, happy tears, sad tears, and I'm gonna miss her so much. That was 3 years I played Saga.
That's amazing. So we'll all be sure to tune in for the grand finale and see what's happened. And hopefully there'll be tears before bedtime today on this episode. Today we are playing The Scar in the Sky. And I'm going to give you your chance to win those inspiration points for the episode ahead so that you can cast them aside and not use them. Now, ordinarily, when we get to this part of the show, either CJ or our guests get all of the questions correct, and they allow certain others to hide.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Do you see where it's going?
I think I do. I think I do.
Well, what I'm going to do today is just vary the format a little bit. I'm going to ask you each a question, and if you get a clean sweep, then I will give you the inspiration point. All right, seem reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, feel like this is cross the bridge of eternal doom.
I would like to point out that generally we do better at the questions than we do in the combat. So it's kind of our strength, if you think about it. Just think about that. Let's see if we can make them eat this challenge.
Sure. I have a premonition. I'm going to get a what's your favorite color question. And Steve, you're going to get what's the average airspeed velocity of a coconut bearing swallow?
Yeah.
Just you wait and see. We will start with Anina. The poem Hrafnsmal largely consists of a conversation between an unnamed Valkyrie and which bird?
Raven.
Correct. Well done. Taylor, come to you next.
Here we go.
In the Icelandic Book of Settlement about the first people of Iceland, Hrafnir Flóki took three of which bird to help him find his way on the final leg of the voyage to Iceland?
I'm going to say Raven again.
Correct.
Okay.
CJ, coins minted in the reign of Olaf Guthrison as the King of York between 939 and 941 were emblazoned with the image of which bird?
A raven?
Correct. Well done. Steve.
I feel like we're heading like 60 miles per hour towards
Oh, there's a wall coming.
Steve, King Canute the Great of England, Norway, and Denmark carried a banner made from white silk at the Battle of Ashendon in 1016. What bird featured on this famous flag?
Oh, I'm going to go with, now, can I phone a friend? No, yeah, Raven. We're going to go with Raven. That's my final answer.
Correct. And so we come to Bill. In the Poetic Edda poem, Völuspá, Gullin Kumbi is one of which three birds whose crowing is foretold to signify the beginning of the events at Ragnarok?
Crows.
Is
I'm that dead your either way. Whatever way he goes, I'm dead.
Right? Is that your final answer?
Fine. Raven?
It's a rooster, Bill. It's a rooster.
That rooster that crows. Oh my God.
It's a turkey, so.
I feel like I made a real cock up of that whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
What a bonus.
So close. So you almost got the inspiration point, but Bill let the side down and ruined it for everybody.
Crowing. Oh my God. It was so much pressure. Oh my God.
Let us begin our adventure on the Falcon, the marooned Imperial ship that is stuck on the sea ice far to the east of Hautmakar. Air, Leomi and Gigi, you have made yourself comfortable over the past few days. You've cleaned out the kitchen of rancid meat. You've sanitized the sick bay. And now you are trying to work out how to make it go. You still haven't managed to work out how to shut the door, so it is no surprise when, several days later, you hear a clanking and a clattering as yet another group approach the ship. This small band look like an altogether different breed, but they bear the hallmarks of Imperial soldiers. Most are men, but they appear to be led by an alpha of some renown, and in their midst, weaving excitedly through the ranks, is a familiar face.
Hello? Hello?
Is that a voice? Mother?
Mother wants
Come
you to
out,
kill again.
I can smell you. You're here. Hello, it's me. Alma.
Oh my God, it's her. Alma's here. Come on in. The door doesn't work anyways.
Where have you been? Leomi says, we were going to look for you, but Gigi needed a lot of breakfast that day.
Well, have you heard what happened?
No.
First of all, everyone thought you were dead, since no one would be stupid enough to walk straight into the blizzard of the century.
Flawless plan.
And also, I did want to meet you, but we had very, very important things to sort out. I'll meet my new friends.
And who Hello, are new your friends. New friends?
So a tall form would walk in. You would see a tall, straight, probably 7-8 foot tall, Alfar. Very imposing, kind of looking down. Gnarled skin and bark, covered in drawings and tapestries of ships, both ancient and new. He kind of just surveys you all imperiously.
Hail,
Well met.
Well met, Delphar.
Flips his cape. It says, hello there. I am Griotgarth the Magnificent. My friends call me Gigi for short. And what is your name? Oh, other tree, that second tree I have met in my life.
Yeah, he always talks like that. You get used to it after a while.
I am known as Cole, strange one. Good to meet you.
Welcome, brother, the Omi says. Would you like some of the population of my bugs that live on me to join your colony? Perhaps a little exchange, a little cultural exchange?
Should we look away?
No. It's perfectly natural. No. Nothing to be embarrassed about.
Thank you, Kin. I gladly accept.
The group that has assembled here, led by this character, Old King Cole, as he is known, has been led to the ship by Alma, and you are kind of refugees or resistance fighters who have fled the situation in Hapmaka.
It seems a merry soul.
Well, this is what happened, okay? It's awful. The Sons of Ivaldi, they're the bad guys. They're like the really, really, really bad guys. You know, like the wolves that aren't even hungry and they just maul things just for the fun of it? They're them. So they're now picking people off and just making them disappear. So we have to sort the situation.
What about them made you think they were good?
Did you hear what I said? I said just how bad. Have you never met one of those rabid wolves? They burned down the Temple of the Bear.
Oh, Alma, that is terrible news.
Oh.
Exactly.
What of the brother Alfar that lived there? What if the bear comes?
I don't know. I'm worried, but we need to sort the situation. Nip it in the bud.
There was some hope that we could find them on our travels, but we have heard no word yet. So as kind of Cole was standing there, I only really half paying attention to the conversation that's happening because Cole is just taking in the inside of the ship. There's a wave of familiarity washing over him as he takes it all in. He begins to slowly walk around, kind of feeling the whole panels in a almost tender way of recognition, as the Falkir becomes known to him and he recognizes that this ship is essentially the long lost ship of his charge that he first set out into the cosmos on, a ship that he deemed lost, that he deemed destroyed, and almost like looking at a ghost come back to life, he's just kind of in a state of shock at this point.
Indeed, 5 years ago, the Falkir, as far as you're concerned, was lost in the Doom. All hands presumed missing.
So why did you all walk into the blizzard in the first place anyway?
Wonderful question. Air, I believe it was your idea.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was Air. Not all of his ideas. Not any of his ideas, really.
Yes, it was my idea. We knew that we were given coordinates to something we needed to investigate, we were told. I consulted with the voices in my head and determined with some confidence that the blizzard would not arrive until we got there. We knew we were walking into it, and partly it allowed us, I think, the masterstroke of getting away from any potential pursuit, that and partly just my misunderstanding.
Let's just take a moment at this point, because in those intervening days, everyone has leveled up and taken their mythic paths. So they're at level 7, just for the purposes of explaining character development and your growth as people. You've all taken these new paths to mark your progress. Bill, you've embraced your inner demon of death and become a Valkyrie. Now, obviously, everyone's going to imagine you, as they're listening now, as some kind of busty Brunhilde character, but
accurate in its own way.
But true Valkyries aren't these kind of Wagnerian fairy tales. The original form was this fierce spirit who was doing the command of the war god and stirring up disorder and chaos on the battlefield. And only later did it become conflated with the Shield Maiden. So you've embraced this bringer of death, this harbinger of doom.
Well, yes, that's one way to express it. But I think the real focus should be, it's all about healing. But sometimes, even as a healer, one has to know when someone has lived long enough or is perhaps suffering, and it may not be apparent to someone who's expert, but with all the training that I have, with a mere touch, I can heal or
put people out of their misery.
Or my misery.
Steve, you have finally decided to embrace the seer in your ear, and in a desperate attempt to stay awake over the course of each episode, you've embraced the ancestor spirits and become a speaker.
Yes, really leaned into the spirits, and well, he calls them the voices in his head, but yeah, they are the spirits of the dead who walk among us and live rent free in his head. They have a lot to say. They have a lot to offer, and he's hoping that by, you know, really listening to them and paying attention to what they have to say, maybe they can help him stay awake.
Very good. Now, CJ, you have chosen to become a Giant's Bane, a champion of Thor, a protector against the murderous forces of Ragnarok, and then you've awarded yourself the Polar Star for conspicuous heroism.
That is correct.
Congratulations.
And I have honor plus 9, right? So you should all respect Gigi out of the gate.
Whilst wearing your medal proudly on your chest and, you know, burnishing that medal, you've joined the ranks of the exalted.
It's almost as satisfying as the silver medal at the All Asgard Games.
Almost.
And Nina, you have chosen the path of the Warden, so you can presumably better police this wild, wild north that you find yourself in.
Yes, protect things and people she finds important.
And Taylor, you've joined us, and obviously you're playing Old King Cole. He's actually mentioned in the rule book, so you've picked up a story there, and you're playing a Vatir, a chthonic guardian. That is my favorite word of all time, chthonic. Elf chosen for their dedication to Yggdrasil, a fierce protector of their native lands.
Absolutely, yeah. A deep devotion to carrying out the protection and defeat of the threats to Yggdrasil, and an adventurous spirit as well to try and, you know, break through the confines of the world to explore space and travel, but a deep, deep devotion to that protection and guardian mentality.
And having listened to several episodes of the podcast over the past couple of months, you obviously compare and contrast yourself to Bill the Alpha and and Leomi as a character. What would you say would be the chief differences between your portrayals?
I'd like to hope that Cole brings a stoicism and professionalism to the charge of protection and exploration that he seeks. Hopefully a added degree of innate competency that I hope to imbibe.
There you go, Bill. Challenge is on. It's like a jewel of the alpha.
Yeah, I mean, on our side, we like to have men in the group because they've been useful so very many times. So that's my advice to you. For long-term survival, keep a group of men in front.
Useful puppets to kind of, you know, meat shield.
Yeah, yes.
Didn't they just, didn't they just show up with the whole group of them?
They did. So over the course of the next couple of weeks, you will be introduced to more of your fledgling crew. Alma has recruited a bunch of people and found you out in the wasteland, and Cole is a skipper in his own right. He used to pilot this very ship before it was lost to the yawning void, and he is obviously delighted, if somewhat mystified, as to how it has survived.
Cole is not one to show too much emotion on his sleeve, but there is a rapture, and the focus is far from the three of you, at least at this point.
Okay, well, as you all and gather the various Imperial pilots and technicians, bustle on board the ship, directed by Cole, to various stations to ready the ship, prepare it, to check the munitions, to replenish the stores, and generally make it ready for liftoff. They also, you'll be glad to know, work out how to press the button to shut the door and prevent you all being sucked out into the Gununga Gap.
I think this whole moment shows that we have handled the task really well. We now know completely how to operate the ship. Things just tend to go our way.
Could you try and press the button with the door symbol before?
We've been very busy. There were things.
We have staff for that now. You know, next time before you wander off, you could wait, you know, an hour or two, and then I'll come in.
Oh, I see. Well, I suppose we could do that. I'm just happy this time we don't have to run off across the frozen waste. We have another way to leave. It's very good.
As you all stand round debating the finer points of dining etiquette, the Hrafenhaus, the raven's skull around Leomi's neck, begins to hum with a kind of expectant energy, and the Utvarp, the radio, crackles to life, and you hear this exchange on what Cole you recognize as Imperial frequencies. The exchange is this.
Echo here.
This is Wavewalker. Report.
Target is back in custody.
Firefox asked for confirm who was the target.
Law speaker, trying to escape.
Give me your current location.
78 North, 11 East.
And the other loose ends. There's an order from the Firefox to destroy everything.
Blaine, look, there are 8 guys coming, you know, on Her Majesty's service. They'll be at the observatory soon. Maybe in 50, 60 minutes.
And at that, the frequency crackles off. It was almost as if it was a radio intercept that the Raven Skull wanted you to hear.
Holy crap.
We have to go there. We have to go there now. Like now. We've got 50, 60 minutes.
How fast can we get there? Do we know where it is? So many questions.
There were coordinates, I believe. Yeah. I think the people who know how to work the ship should simply make it so.
78 North, 11 East, they said.
11 East, thank you.
Ooh, it's shining. Ooh, can I look at it for a sec? Alma points to the Raven Skull.
Of course, my dear.
Now, Alma does have the remote sense ability, which enables her to use her slightly psychic powers to determine things about objects and artifacts, including their previous owners.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What can you tell us?
Alma, by holding the artifact and focusing your mental energies on understanding, you are horrified by the realization that this is indeed the skull of Munin, one of Odin's ravens. They once perched on his shoulders and reconnoitered to the ends of the earth, returning each evening to whisper him news. But for some reason, this poor bird has been reduced to this skull form. Fortunately or unfortunately for you, Hugin and Munin never rest, and they have been searching for the instruments of their salvation, and it just so happens that for some bizarre reason they ended up with you. There's something that comes to you that is even darker, even more mysterious, because as you touch this skull, you get a very clear vision, and I'll describe it to you, and all of this is in your head. This is something that is firing the neurons behind your eyes. What you see is a macabre vision where you are surrounded by dancing tarantulas that whirl like spinning tops. And then suddenly each part of their body is stretched in different directions until they're completely torn to shreds. At that moment, into the visionscape, a huge raven swoops down. It alights on a hollow man whose body is made from and also pierced by a huge ironwood tree. The raven begins to gnaw on screaming corpses whilst their flesh roasts in a sudden burst of flames. And this whole scene is watched by a ring of men with identical faces and icy grins. As quickly as that vision flooded your mind, as you put down the skull and stagger back, it dissipates and you return to the recognition that you are in the raven's nest on board the Falky.
Oh, God. Oh. And she sort of, she's holding the raven's skull.
She looks around.
Obviously, there's a lot of people on the ship, but still she leans in and goes, "That's murder."
That is shocking. Shocking. What else can you tell us?
I saw people being torn apart and looked at all these faces. The same face was just staring at it. I think it just felt evil. They're up to something.
People torn apart, but not us doing it.
No, not us.
Good.
No. It was... Mm-hmm. We have to go to those coordinates now. Can I get a closer sense of who the people with the same face were?
Give me a wits roll.
17.
So you are familiar with the fact that the Sons of Avalni are rumored to be a clone race, and perhaps the identical faces and malicious grins that you saw do reflect their reputation. They have been known as arms merchants and certainly profiteered during the Jotun War to a great extent.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the Sons of Vivaldi. They all look the same in my head, and they were tearing these animals apart, and ooh, more of me. You know, more of this. We need to stop that.
Yes, we should go.
How soon can we get there?
That would be down to Captain Cole.
Yeah, when the first radio was intercepted, was that loud enough for like the whole ship to hear it, or is it just in their little group where they're talking?
You would have all been in the Raven's Nest and able to hear that.
Copy that.
Your natural position as the former captain and presumably the were most able to command the ship would be on the con, able to direct the crew accordingly.
Absolutely. Okay. I would imagine I would be able to punch the coordinates in to kind of get a GPS location of where we are from it. Fair to say? Or
it is fair, and okay. You recognize that the coordinates are a military site to the north of the former archipelago called New Kernegard. You've worked alongside the military for some time now, and you know it is a previously defunct site, but resurrected again between a kind of partnership between the Sons of Avalni and the Imperial forces. It exists somewhere to the north of Kongsteen.
Okay, fantastic. Pilot, please chart a course. We need to get there in, what did the message say, 60 minutes is what we have?
50 to 60 minutes, 50. So in 49 minutes.
49.
It'll this give place, us the elements of surprise.
Well, then we probably don't want to be blasting in there, engines blazing at full speed now, do we?
Well, if there's more of us than that, then we could, but yeah.
Your pilot is called Ragni. She has the ability to access thought and memory drive. She does insist, though, that the bearer of the Raven Skull, Liami, joins her in the pilot's chair so that they can share the thought and memory link, the oblivion link, that creates the bond between the pilots and enables them to visualize a destination and jump to it.
Right. Yomi does so. All about Oblivion, or Oblivious.
Cole, I'm going to give you a description just for you because you know New Kernagarth well, and you will want to perhaps instruct Ragni as to how close to jump in. Again, thought a memory drive isn't going to fly you there. You're going to materialize somewhere close to those coordinates, and they're going to be reliant on your description as you paint a picture in order to effectively teleport the ship to the correct spot. So the base hunkers glumly at the very edge of civilization. It is situated on the southern side of the Ulla Fjord, a stretch of icy water 30 kilometers long and nearly 10 kilometers wide, and built on a flat coastal plateau amidst a backdrop of jagged mountains and glaciers. There is a harbor there with one large berth for icebreaker ships to dock, and the main base is made up of a dozen large prefabricated buildings to be used as barracks as well as a sick house, and they are set in a circle around state-of-the-art twin telescopes that use their antennas to monitor the gap. Now, fortunately for you, the settlement is an evergreen silent community to protect the highly sensitive scientific equipment from disruption. So that's the kind of lie of the land, this ring of barracks on the edge of a fjord. But in addition to that, you know that there is a mountaintop observatory that is reached by an aerial tramway, so effectively a cable car that leads up to a lonely mountain that sits alongside the barracks. And that observatory is kind of ancient and dilapidated. It used to allow the northern explorers to penetrate the Arctic in their airships, and there is an airship hangar there as well. But you will have to, if you are conducting a rescue mission for the Law Speaker, and as Alma says, to potentially find the bear cubs from the Temple of the Bear, then you will need to determine the best spot to jump the ship.
The observatory, would I know roughly how often it is visited? You said dilapidated. Is it common knowledge that it's fairly empty most of the time, or is it indeterminate?
To the best of your knowledge, it is defunct and is rarely used. That said, give me a witch roll.
Does everyone else on the Raven's Nest, do we hear or see what's being described?
Yeah, what's being described is really Cole's recollection of the place that he can, you know, convey to you and to his pilot, because if he's jumping to those coordinates, he's just need to make a determination about where to land.
Wit roll was 9, by the way.
With your wheel for Wisdom of the Ages?
Thank you for reminding me. So 13.
So you have a hunch, based upon your 1,300 years of existence, that if you were to keep people out of sight and out of mind, you probably wouldn't just put them in the main barracks surrounded by Imperial soldiers. Exactly. You'd probably sequester them in the observatory until such time as these men on Her Majesty's service came to collect them.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ride the cable car.
Yeah. With the thought and memory drive, can we blink into, like, inside structure? You said there's a hangar there. Is it possible to essentially blink into a hangar, or does it have to be kind of an exposed outside environment?
The hangar would be good for an airship, which is a kind of Zeppelin-style device that would anchor on one of the mooring masts. Your ship is considerably more advanced and would probably burst through any wooden building where you would appear there.
So definitely too large for it. Got it. Okay.
Ragni does suggest to you that you could benefit from the tactics of an Isbjorn and benefit from a dusting of snow, effectively building a den. Ragni is an experienced pilot who has been part of your command for many years, and that would be her suggestion. She can get you close and land the thing, and then you would be able to advance on foot to the observatory. Alternatively, other members of your crew suggest that you could use the whirlers, which are effectively drop ships, to land, though you'd lose that pod and no longer have that mechanism to emergency eject should it come to that. The head of security, who has joined your team, recommends that you might be able to hover above the facility and rappel down, but that comes with the obvious risk of detection.
And those pods, they're not like shuttles. There's no way to do a transport back with them. One use and done, essentially.
There is. They're generally picked up by retrieval vessels, but it's not something that you would have the luxury of time to do.
I think the best bet for us is to avoid the main part of the fjord where the barracks are. There's too many troops there, too many eyes watching. We'd be obvious targets the moment we entered the area. But the best thing could probably be to do some form of a stealth mission. Now, these people are probably being held far out of the normal hustle and bustle of this base up in the observatory. I would recommend we get in as close as possible to drop in a small team that could infiltrate it, extract our people, and we pick up and get out before we're detected. And I would probably look at the three newcomers, and as I see them, and just kind of say, do you think you're capable of handling a delicate mission like that?
What the fuck do you think? No! You can hear me from space!
Right, so stealth is not your strong suit.
Something less flashy, the stealth missions.
Does he have a muzzle of some sort?
Maybe, Gigi, if you didn't tell everyone about your victories, we might get in quietly. I'm just suggesting.
You do bring up a good point. What if I walked up to the front door, knocked, they'll know who I am, we'll talk about the all Asgard games and other things. I'll keep them distracted while the rest of you go do your stealth thing. It's not honorable to do stealth.
This is a base with quite a few armed personnel who you'd have to distract for quite a while for us to execute this.
And it just so happens that I have enthralling performance. I shall keep them distracted for a good long while.
That they're getting rid of people that they don't particularly like.
They don't have to like me. The enthralling performance is magic. It keeps their attention whether they like me or not.
They're shooting people that they don't like.
I can handle the risk. I'll distract them. You jump in, do your thing. I'm not too worried. I'm not going in silently. Use me. Use my strength. Use my loudness. And then I'll bugger off and run somewhere and I'll be fine. Pick me up over there.
Alma turns to Iomi and goes, help me. Time is of the essence. There's bear cubs.
Could we quietly smash into the building with the ship? And kick a crapty out of the wreckage, maybe. Surprise.
That is pretty subtle for us.
You're suggesting a quiet crash.
See, Cole, I have to deal with.
You can't do that?
On a daily basis.
I admire your patience.
I've never used a ship like this before.
We're gonna go in quietly. Imagine you're a wolverine like me and you're hunting prey. It's a really, really, really scared rabbit. So you have to be quiet. Okay?
And imagine you can do that, plus all the guards have awareness -5.
I think Gigi may have a point. I think we can do that. I can go a little bit invisible. Air is constantly disappearing.
It's true.
That's good.
And yet keeps coming back, disappointingly, but nonetheless.
Would I have a sense of how many people would be there? Like, it's defunct, but do I... Yeah, I mean...
The main military base will have probably 40 or 50 Imperial troops. And you'll be able to verify that quite quickly when you blink to the area, when you flip to the area. The observatory, again, you can't tell. There might be, there's clearly a retrieval squad on the way.
I could disguise everyone so we could look like the retrieval squad.
Oh, can you disguise everyone? I didn't know.
That's a great idea.
I can disguise people. And it's an illusion. It's not, you know, a real disguise. It's an illusion. It lasts for an hour. I can do it 5 times.
There's the plan. Make me look like an alpha.
Wow.
I'm going to just wave my hands in an attempt to describe this thing, right? So,
jazz hands.
Let's try and do this. So here is the plateau, and on that plateau is the military base with 40 or 50 troops. Over here, represented by my fist, is the observatory. The observatory is to the side of the plateau. The idea is, and I'm attempting to do this with my thumb now, you land on this side, you could get up there, or... So there's a couple of different ways you could do it. You could go what CJ says and sort of go straight into the base there with 40 people. You could crash like Steve says. That's that would be certainly a route one way of attempting the rescue. Not sure that anyone in the building would actually survive, but you could take your chances. You know, as you could scale up, you could take the cable car up. The cable car links this base and this observatory like that. Do those various hand gestures help in any way?
Ian's left hand is the plateau, and to his right fist represents the base. You see,
it's helped me understand what I want my code name to be. I want my code name to be Broadsword, and I think Steve should be Danny Boy.
That little talk was basically the podcast version of taking the difficulty down from medium to easy.
Yeah, right.
And thank goodness for it. This is what a good God for does. That.
Don't we have parachutes? Didn't they Orkneus jump from this ship with parachutes? Couldn't we just parachute in, James Bond style?
You could try that. That was the parachuting or rappelling approach. Is that another different?
The security officer said, yeah. It depends on your guys' level of risk and what you want to take. I think the easiest course of action is to avoid the main part of the barracks and the main part of the building altogether. I imagine your performance is going to be enthralling, Gigi, but 40 or 50 guards is a lot to distract and feels like will only have the effect of ringing the doorbell.
Remember, I'm famous and I'm rich and I have honor plus 9.
That won't help if you've got a bullet in your skull, okay? So we're going to do what old King Cole here said, okay? And we're going to avoid the main building. And then we will set up a open mic night where you can perform for everyone, okay? Let's go.
A rousing performance as we fly off into the distance. How about that? Well, the cable car is in the heart of the base. I don't think we want to walk right into their midst just to take the easy way up the mountain.
All right.
I saw it in this movie where ravens dare. It was awesome.
Is that a pun? Because it's where eagles dare, and you've just changed it to ravens for the sake of this podcast.
Yes, that's why I said Broadsword is the boy as well. We are all on myself. We are all on to you.
Very good. We'll see if you can emulate it. You better just hope it's not the Guns of Navarone.
I recommend that we touch down on the far side of the mountain, scale it. We have the crew waiting above to pick us up. When we need to extract, we can use the rappelling ropes to egress as well as ingress, I believe. And that is probably we're not going to be able to get back down once we get up. We're going to raise the alarm. So we need a way for the ship to pick us out.
Well, this all sounds very sensible, very much not what we usually do. But I mean, hey, let's give it a try.
At this point, I would turn to Alma and just be like, where did you find these characters?
They're a bit rough around the edges, but you know that they're still alive. They survived the blizzards or something.
Charming.
Eventually.
Cole, do you want to give the command to the crew so you're going to land on the far side of the observatory? Are you actually then going to climb up as opposed to
Yeah, it's the tricky part, isn't it?
Wait, I may have a solution for that. I have a thing I haven't got to use yet.
Oh.
And I was just looking
at a lot of things you haven't used.
It's true. Secret path.
Like what healing? About
secret path? If I can, well, you weren't that sick. Name a destination you believe to be within 9 miles of you. If it is, land spirits. Oh, that just moves us faster, not instantly.
Do you want disguises? Is that decided?
Do you remember, CJ, a few episodes ago when you
machine gunned everyone?
When you cut runes into the rope in order to scale the troll's tongue.
Of course.
Yes. I do remember. I have a spell that allows me to climb walls called branch runes. Indeed.
And how many castings of that do you have?
2. 7. So I could climb a wall. And I'm very large, so I could carry maybe like 2 of you. Like Andre the Giant, Princess Bride.
Just big Wolverine, give me expert climbing skills, perchance.
Obviously.
I've got claws.
I don't know that it does. Not for the paths that you've taken. There are a couple of paths that do give you wheels on climbing, but not the warden.
Wait, so why are we not just bringing the ship in above, and then we can rappel down? And then whoever's still on the ship, just bring it lower. And then we can jump back down into the ship when we come back the other way.
Well, if you want it to be easy.
I mean, yes, that's... We'll
go. Are ships really noisy from the outside? Would they hear us?
Yeah, is
how... Ships are loud, right?
How obvious is the ship?
I mean, well, like, bear in
is
mind...
Is it like big old pirate ship... All guns blazing, everyone will notice it. Or are we talking stealth helicopter?
More the latter, because whilst it is sizable, it is made of sleek ironwood. It is, like its name suggests, a similar architecture and style as a falcon. And it could pop into existence. It could flit above. You could rappel out of the extravehicular pore, the door that you've just learned to close, and then it could alight relatively stealthily, perhaps without drawing attention. Certainly, if luck were on your side, then that might be possible. It depends whether the fates are smiling on you today or not.
Do we have some radios? So
there's an evergreen dead space, isn't it?
It's a silent zone, exactly. Yeah. So
we could send a flare up when we're ready to be picked up. We have flares.
You have a Gigi.
Yeah.
Could we? Yeah, I'll just Gigi will just shout.
Hello.
Steve, could you disguise the whole ship as a cloud?
Oh. Hmm. One creature. Is the ship a creature?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Wasn't it alive? Didn't it, like, doesn't it communicate? Like,
rotten memory and living wood, and my goodness.
Does it have to be alive to be a creature, you know?
It's alive to Cole. Cole thinks it's alive.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There we are.
I believe we have a quorum.
Unfortunately.
Ian's doing the face palm again.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the veto. No, you cannot disguise the ship as a cloud. Neither do you need to, because it is the polar night and it's dark.
That is an embarrassingly obvious detail we should have probably made sure of.
Wow.
Yeah. Turn off the headlights.
We're hovering, just before we jump off said ship to the ledge, the knuckle, the plateau, I would like to use remote sense. Gigi, give me the god tongue. Come on.
The what?
You can call it whatever you want.
Come on. I need to find them. Come on.
The what?
You know exactly what I'm talking about. Hand it over. I'll give it back. To have a look.
This isn't the time.
Look, we have bear cubs to save.
So Gigi's going to walk over and just very quietly and awkwardly just be like,
there you go, but I need it back. He even whispers loudly.
Alma, you are there referring to the errant piece of the Dvurg Legsko that Gigi has retrieved from the burning Asbjornsson mansion and kept quietly and secretly to himself. You use your remote sense on it, and you are somewhat shocked to find it is a piece of the supercomputer Mim, perhaps the last ever piece, for the machine was silenced in the Doom.
Oh, wow. You really need to keep this safe.
Doesn't immediately help you now, but perhaps it is good to have used your psychic powers to at least hint to Gigi as to why people are so keen to get it back.
Yes, so she'll repeat that. Now this stays here, okay? No spreading rumors, because everyone wants this thing, okay?
Oh, I know. Give it back.
I'll
put it away. They'll have to
I
get through me.
I know you've had it since we met on the raft, remember? I called you Godtag.
No.
I'd be insulted if it was anyone else. Right, let's oh, weren't we seeing time?
Your bioship, the Falkir, flips into existence, powered by thought and memory drive. The pilot brings you immediately above the observatory, and you are able to look out of the extravehicular pore with ropes ready in order to get down to the observatory below you. You are at a height of no more than 20 meters, such is the expertise of the pilot Ragni.
I think we should see if a parachute will support Air's stony diamond encrusted weight, just as an experiment.
Only 20 meters off the observatory. We're not going to have time for it to open. Yeah. I think we're in it for ropes.
Okay, in order to fast rope down then, using a rope and harness lowered down to the observatory by the hovering Falkir. Well, there are a few approaches. Fast roping requires a successful might challenge roll or a suitable military profession. Another option is to rappel down with a harness, although it may take some time to set up and allow the people in the observatory to spot the ship.
I was a military analyst. That's one of my professions. Does that help me? Can I analyze the...
It counts as a military profession, so I will assume that you are familiar with rope work and Viking raids from your time 11 centuries ago and enable you to rappel down with great deftness. The same for Taylor?
I got the soldier background for sure. Real quick, kind of point of order question. Since I have the take the con ability, do I have to be on the ship for that to still work? So, in short, can we
you do
bring initial crew?
Do, but the crew will be able to pilot the ship. There are enough of them currently.
I was just thinking if we could bring half of them with us as extra bodies and leave half, but that's,
your away party, so to speak, is the five of you.
Perfect.
Anina, Alma does, obviously, as a child soldier, you also have some expertise here. Gigi, as you've taken that giant's bane path that comes with a military profession, so I'm going to enable you to rappel down without a harness as well, just holding onto the rope and whistling down. Just remains for Steve as to how you're going to...
I have options. I've been thinking about this, and Air has options.
Is it going to be dropped like a stone?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay. I'm not ruling that out. That's probably where we're going to go. He's going to disguise himself as a member of the Imperial Recovery Team. Now, he doesn't know what that looks like, so it's going to be a uniform like the Imperial people who are here, except with the words Imperial Recovery Team on his chest. which that should be good enough. Then the next plan is going to be either go down on a rope like everyone else and use his spells and abilities to give him as many rerolls as it takes, ideally, to not fall like a stone and hurt himself, or plan C, just fall like a stone and hurt himself. Because I think the harness is going to take way too long.
Let's make that might challenge roll then, Steve. And
let's do it, buddy.
Everyone else is gracefully sliding down their ropes, just like with a whizzing sound. And then, Steve, your roll is?
We're going to use Boon, which is our new spell. We can use the triggered action to do Boon twice, if I'm reading this right. Rise Council, that's it. So that's two rerolls on our might roll, if we need to, which we probably will. And so, are there any wheels or woes that I should know about?
It were, Liam, to use Guest Counsel. He could give you two wheels on that.
You know, I'll do Wise Counsel, Ian. It just occurred to me. I should do Wise Counsel.
All right.
Real quick, while he's rolling, can I do one thing before Cole repels down? And just turn to to my crew and leave orders that I want them to blink back at a lower altitude spot every hour until they see us outside, since we have no way to communicate them.
And whilst that is a logical and clever idea, Ragni, your pilot, reminds you that the thought memory drive effectively operates as a spell, and while she can meditate in order to get that spell, she's got two uses effectively per day. So she's got one use to get you here.
And one to get us out.
One to get you out.
Interesting.
When are we getting an actual real-world lawyer to join us? I just think it might come in handy.
What's wrong with Crapty, the law speaker?
Well, it's just he's also voiced by the GM and therefore may come with a bit of an inherent bias.
My final roll is 23.
There you go.
Thanks to the power of rerolls.
You speed down the rope like a black stone rocket and thud onto the roof. There's no disguising your weight, but you hope that no one has noticed you, and the others slide down and alight with a little bit more grace and finesse alongside you. So you're all in this dark, enveloping velvet polar night. The only thing that's disturbing the darkness is the shimmering scar in the sky above you. There's no moon, there's no stars. Alma, with your night vision, you can clearly see down to the barracks below. For everyone else, it is very difficult to spot anything. You do have your infrared vision, but it doesn't detect any heat signatures. All of the buildings are the same temperature as the icy polar wilderness.
Okay,
so we break in?
Well, you are on the roof. It's up to you to determine whether you break through the roof and land inside, or whether you find a window or go round to the front door.
Peek in through the window first.
Is air going to disguise the rest of us at this point?
If you like.
Yes, very much so.
All right. I have four more disguises available. What would you like to be disguised as? Part of the Imperial Recovery Team, he says, pointing at the text on his chest.
Yes, please, says Naomi.
All right. One for Naomi.
Seems logical.
One for Alma. Mm-hmm. Okay. That looks like that's everyone.
Using glamour signs, you can touch any one creature you can reach, and for an hour, they have an illusory disguise. They can decide what that looks like. You've gone for an Imperial Recovery Team, and presumably you now want to knock on the front door.
Well, let's peek through the window first.
Agreed.
Let me try and give you a bit more of a lie of the land for this building. So, like I said, the observatory is a fairly ramshackle building. It shows lots of signs of wear and neglect. Flaking paint exposes the grey wood beneath. There is a platform all the way round, although it has lost its guardrails. Apart from one room at the southern side of the building, all of the rooms are totally dark. There is no power to this building in general, and the only light that is on is a lamp light in what looks to be an office. As you peer into that room as best you can, you see a couple of, perhaps they are Sons of Evaldi by their cyborg implants, playing cards by lamplight. The office around them is full of paper, piled high on the desks around, and there is an old computational dvurg that sits alongside them in sleep mode.
It looks like they're on break. They're just playing cards. If we look like this, we should be fine. Gigi, just turn the flamboyance down from an 11 to like a 4.
How noise insulated is the building?
He asked loudly.
Not very. Remember, it's ramshackle.
Falling apart, holes in the wall.
Exactly.
So, ambushing them would be a bad idea.
We look like one.
May not have to.
So we can just roll on through as long as we don't engage them in conversation.
From where we're standing, can we see, is there any obvious areas of dilapidation in the building that could be like an entrance point that's not an obvious door, like a hole in the wall, crack in something that we could slip into that would maybe not, you know, be an obvious draw of attention?
Good question. And towards the northern part of the roof, you can see that the whole structure is almost open to the winds. There is a weak roof and a weak floor, and a whole bunch of the wall has come away.
Mm-hmm. I'd probably turn to Alma and say, will you scurry over there and check through this hole? If it's clear in there, we can slip into there and we'll blend in like we were already inside.
And she dashes off.
Give me a slight roll with such wheels as you have that enable you to move silently.
Plus 4. That is... ooh, 21.
Nice.
I am the knight.
Yes. Like a Wolverine ninja, you scale down the side of the building and peer in using your keen night vision and your senses. You can see and smell Crapty Thorfordson is in that room tied to a radiator.
Is anyone else in the room?
There's no one else in that room. The whole structure is clearly weakened here, and you recognize that you're going to have to tread very gingerly on the floor if you're going to find your way to Crapty without triggering a collapse.
Okay. How far did I just dash to get in here versus where everyone else is?
Not very far. This is not a huge building, so no more than 30 yards.
She's going to pop her head back so they can see her going, I found Crapty! But shh, just listen out. I'm going to try and get him out. It looks really, really rickety. Do you hear anything? Dash it.
Friend A. Right.
And you do indeed hear something as the rest of you sitting on top the roof notice that the cable car has jolted into life and is slowly ascending up to the observatory.
No. I'm going to dash back to where I saw Crapty.
Okay, so you're gonna go and try and extract Crapty. Cole, if you give me a wits roll.
18.
You calculate that the speed of the cable car means that you probably have 11 or 12 minutes before it docks at the observatory where you are.
Okay. I turn to the rest of the crew who's with us. Let's move up by this hole in case we need to support quickly. We only have a few minutes and we need to support her actions as fast as possible. But we cannot go in there until we are given the signal. Understood?
Okay. Yes, understood. Yes, very good.
And loud boy.
Silent as a mouse.
A large mouse.
Size of a house.
Very large, but handsome mouse.
Elmer, if you want to cross the weak floor, then you're going to need to give me another slight roll to do so.
Yes, I'm going to do my best. Soft paws on the rickety surface. 15.
You are able to glide across the floor without triggering any collapse, and you can reach the unconscious law speaker, who is, like I said, tied to that radiator. It is possible to quickly release him. He is insensate. He is non-responsive, but alive. You can work out a way to carry him out. If you try and haul him out on the same way that you've come in, then you are going to make the same roll you just did, but with two woes, because he is a dead weight.
What does the room look like? Is there anything that could help me?
There's not. It's clearly a storage room of some description. There's an internal doorway, and through that doorway you can see a room with broken windows that is, again, entirely exposed to the elements from the north. The roof is intact, so you didn't see it before, but the entire northern wall is gone. And in that room are six metal gurneys, each holding what looks like another chained figure. So six chained figures held on these metal gurneys, exposed to the elements. The figures are all dressed in heavy woolen trousers and fur parkas, clearly iced over in the bitter cold.
Are they dead? She does a sniff.
Very wise to detect, because they are not so much dead as centuries old and frozen, perhaps exhumed as part of the activities of the Sons of Avaldi. They're wearing whaler clothing, and they do smell a little bit like old fish.
Too long in the freezer. Ian, if Diomi were to touch a crap tea and cast Everlasting Runes, would that wake him up?
I haven't gotten him out the room yet.
No, I know. I was wondering about whether I climb down and do that, and then it's an easier package.
You know, you could go full level 4 spell, or you could just use some of your things like Yggdrasil's Gift.
Oh, yeah, that one. Well, that was going to be my next question.
Obviously, Cole has that as well, since you share the Alfar's light, grace, and gift for.
And Yggdrasil's Gift, we have to be in contact as well, though, right?
Correct.
Yeah, touch action.
Am I correct in understanding that the troops that are in the barracks down below need to take the cable car to get to where we are? Mm-hmm. And we have 11 minutes? Is that right?
That would be a fair assumption, in that the only visible physical means of getting to the observatory is the cable car.
I think he may be reloading his machine gun.
Yeah. And Bill and I had the same idea.
Could we Rambo this? How many did you see?
That's the cable.
Oh, yeah. There are two Sons of Avaldi? Three?
There are two Sons of Avaldi playing cards in the south part of the building, which is the office lit by lamplight. And it's impossible for you to determine how many of the border steppers, this universe's equivalent of ice, are proceeding up in the cable car.
I have an image of Gigi getting his submachine gun out, turning and saying, "Don't worry, I'll be very quiet."
I didn't say a word.
How thick is the cable for the cable car?
It is a strong steel cable, but with enough time and enough oomph and enough explosives, it could be dealt with.
Question before everything falls apart.
Doing really well, actually.
Yeah, I think we should just let the half-beast lead, because The weasel is actually the least weaselly of most of the group, with the exception of King Cole. The rest of us.
Wolverine
is closely related Wolverine. To a raccoon or a bear, actually.
If Eric looks out over the base, I know it's dark. Does he see any, like, navigation lights? Because, I mean, there must be a drone or some sort of air surveillance or support going on somewhere. There's no way that they're... Sorry, so paranoia set in.
I'm really
looking for that person with the buttons.
I'm like... really enjoying the setup here because this is the most care and planning we have ever done. And yet, I feel it's almost certain to resolve in the usual fashion.
Which is why I'm convinced we're missing something. Yeah.
I have the ability of so far, I haven't sensed anything.
Alma and Cole are just like meticulously crafting this rescue plan, and then over there we have Gigi gets bored and wants to cut the cable.
And shoot everybody.
Two things to heighten your paranoia, Steve. The first is you notice that there is a landing strip to the far side of the barracks. The landing strip has a docked carver, which is a type of Norse warship. The second thing to heighten your paranoia is Anina, the corpses that are on those gurneys, chained to those gurneys, all six of them, are moaning and rattling, trying to escape. You'll remember that the scar in the sky is doing a good job of resurrecting anything that has died from the fish heads that were stuck on a runic purse pole all the way through to the moose in the swimming pool and these dead whalers.
That was your wife, Air.
Okay, she's gonna up the speed of what she was doing, and I'm gonna try and haul Crafty over my shoulder and move like a tree and go.
Slight roll with two woes, please.
So I rolled a 16 and then I have a 6 and a 3.
Okay, that should be fine. You take the 6 and so it becomes a 10.
Yeah.
I did like the way that you rolled those at a large distance and then wouldn't look at them for a few seconds.
Best to be safe. Yeah.
If you've watched the last like 3 episodes of Bardic Quest, you'll understand why. Because for an entire boss battle, I think for about 10 rounds, I didn't roll higher than a 5.
I was
a statistical anomaly. That's why.
What we found in this game is we're able to roll very, very consistently under 7. It's just about a matter of concentration.
Alma, you heft the law speaker onto your shoulder. You find your way padding around the edge of the room, avoiding any weak spots, and you make your way back onto the roof without triggering any collapse. The moaning corpses behind you are left in your wake. However, you have not yet found the 2 bear cubs.
Okay, so I'm going to bring Crafty to them. Here you go. There's some dead that aren't quite dead anymore, but they're stripped down, so I think we're fine. We need to have bear cubs. Bear cubs?
Are they in there?
They have to be in here.
Can you smell them?
Good. I'm going to take a big old whiff.
The stench of the desiccated corpses is unfortunately blocking any ability to use your olfactory skills to any heightened degree. Meanwhile, the cable car lurches along the steel frame.
I'm going to go back in. I'll howl if anything goes wrong.
I don't think you should go alone.
Up to it, then.
All right, fine. I'll jump down in.
I'm going to let Anina off any further slight rolls as she has charted her path across. But Taylor, could you give me a slight roll for Cole?
Before I jump in, can I use Dream Sight to anticipate where the floor might collapse underneath me?
In this podcast, we like to ignore all of our abilities like Dream Sight and not use them. So can you stop showing Bill up?
I can try, but I don't want
Bill
to.
Bill likes to keep them as like jewelry. He's just
got it. Trophies. Gigi's got the medals. I got spells that I could have used, but yeah.
Your ability to peer into the near future, to, like precognition, that's a word.
Yeah.
Are sure able really. To dance across the floor and avoid any of the structural faults. The two of you now stand in what must be close to the center of the observatory. And you are actually, if you skirt past the mortuary with the corpses, you can see a laboratory. And in the laboratory are two cubs in barren cages, perhaps awaiting vivisection. One of them is lying on the cement floor in the cage, the other is turning in circles, pacing back and forth. They cower at your approach. Each of them has a metal collar on their neck.
What does the locking mechanism look like for the cage?
It should be breakable.
There's not like a handy hook on the wall with a key on it?
There is. You look around and clearly the guards, the technicians have left the key easily accessible should they wish to access these bedcubs, and you can unlock the doors quietly. You have successfully retrieved the two bear cubs who they're cradled in your arms, one each, and you can bring them back out of the back of the building without attracting any attention. Meanwhile, the cable car continues its inexorable rise.
Gigi's ready. He's got three grenades. As soon as that door opens, he's tossing them in.
Where's the third one? I'm kind of scared to ask.
Juggling.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Are you really juggling grenades?
I will be.
Please say yes.
Are you really asking Gigi that question?
Please just say yes.
I told you, enthralling performance.
Memorable.
I think that that's a fair enough response, actually, for you, Gigi. So as the cable car alights, they look out at your juggling, and they are indeed enthralled. They cannot believe that a member of their unit wearing their self-same overalls and uniform is standing on the roof juggling with such skill and grace, and they all, rather than jumping straight out and heading to the observatory door, they all stand mouths agape in the doorway to the cable car.
Hang on, I'm gonna do
result.
I'm gonna actually juggle some dice here, and then he's gonna go enjoying the show, and then by the way, these are all live, so just kind of one by one. Hup, one, hup, two, hup, three.
Let the games begin.
And what type of grenades were they?
The ones from the armory.
It's a good old-fashioned incendiary grenades.
Yes. Go boom.
Okay, each of those is 2d6, I think. Get prepared to give me a whole bunch of rolling.
What kind of roll to aim the grenades correctly? Because remember, Gigi's not the best at throwing.
You need to make a slight challenge roll for each of those grenades, please.
Oh, goodness.
You got this.
Okay. All right.
Yes.
15, 16, and 19.
All right.
Nice.
Then, in quick succession, you lob those grenades. And I'm going to assume that in order to speed their departure, you're going to use your shape strong gift to give you the ability to have that extra action. And so, you know, your arms whirl like StarCAD of old, and you hurl those grenades. Each of them is going to explode and release their fiery substance in a dice 6 plus 3-yard radius. We'll say that encompasses the whole doorway. Everything in there is going to take 2 dice 6 damage per grenade. So give me 6 dice 6, please. In the meantime, ooh, smoke issues from each of the burning substances and shrouds the cable car in thick, dense smoke.
Wow.
17 total.
They know we're here.
certainly, certainly do. No, you are here. Steve, have you got any kind of suitable thunder god spells that you might want to unleash to finish the job?
Yes, I think we should. I'd like to aim Storm Seed, assuming I can see what's going on. I think a little or a very big lightning bolt in the area would be just the trick. So that would be 3d6 plus 5 damage to everything within presumed point zero. Yeah, I have a point on the ground. Yeah, I just have to be outside. This is going to work.
You summon an electrical surge from the night sky that strikes the cable car, jolting the entire structure. Bolts of lightning fly from the sky, and everything sparks, and the smell of ozone hangs richly in the air. Okay, roll your damage.
I did. It was disgraceful. It was 9 points of damage, and they each make a might challenge roll with one woe. If they fail it, they are deafened for an hour.
Between the three incendiary grenades and the bolt of lightning from the heavens, the cable car careens off its cable and starts to shudder and fall below, with the deafened soldiers within wailing and screaming, howling as they plummet back to Earth. Taylor, is there a reason why you're doing an impression of me and holding your head?
Yeah, because I'm imagining Cole and Alma inside just hearing like three explosions followed by a crack of thunder followed by the screams of men hurtling to their death back down to the barracks. And probably just turning to Alma with a look that says, this is kind of your fault for bringing these guys.
I think Alma would just cover the eyes of the little bear cub.
The sirens that begin to wail across the barracks and echo out over the fjord are deafening.
Yeah, I think I had a comment earlier about doorbells and ringing them, and
Can you get that shit back, like, now? Chip,
now would
chip.
Be great.
And I think we should use our guns to shoot the ship that's sitting on the runway before we leave. Unless we just vanish with the thought and memory drive.
Are we back up on the roof now at this point with the bear cubs?
The two of you can clamber to the roof, but Cole, you'll be able to climb up first, and Nina, Alma, is going to have to remain behind and pass the bear cubs up.
Mm-hmm. Fireman's lift up, yep. Mm-hmm.
It's at that moment that with an earth-quaking rumble below, the sleek Norse ship roars into life. It abruptly rockets into the sky, ascending into the atmosphere with fearsome speed, and then pivoting in a smooth, calculated arc, the ship aligns its trajectory towards you. Its intimidating array of precisely calibrated guns glinting ominously.
I did say.
I think we all knew it'd end here. Hey, but our ship's ready to pick us up right now, though, right?
The Falkir is lurking, covered with snow, to be as undetectable as an Isbjorn den, buying you some time before it flits away. It could come and collect you, were you to send a flare up and then power up thought and memory drive, but very act of using the Oblivion Link takes a minute to power up, creating the requisite magnetic field. And first of all, you have to actually get aboard your ship.
Are we assuming it kind of parked on the far side of the mountain that we were originally going to scale from? Yeah, okay.
The good news is that the observatory on the mountaintop acts as a barrier, at least a visibility between the enemy ship and yours.
Anyone got any sleds?
Could I carve wave runes and then turn the shield upside down? And we could ride in it?
No, because it's kind of an immobile protective barrier. It's a kind of force field, not necessarily something you can ride. Certainly not down a mountain top.
Now, are we in two groups at this point? Because did Gigi and Steve go off to the cable car, and now it's...
No, we're still on the roof.
You're still on the roof? Okay.
You're on different parts of the roof.
Got it.
Alma and Cole, you are on the north side. The other three on the south side. And Air, you were going to do something to revive your stalwart friend, the Lord Speaker.
Leomi was, I think.
Leomi was. Yes, I'm going to cast the Yggdrasil's gift, I think, should do the trick.
So, Leomi, you reach out a leafy branch and caress the Law Speaker back to consciousness.
Holy crap, it worked. I'm going to keep hitting that joke till it works.
Fulfritzen is very relieved to see you. And he embraces you like a bosom chum and is profuse in his thanks for his rescue.
Excellent. You're safe.
Am I? Because it does appear that we are on top of a roof in the middle of New Kernagar.
Well, by our measures, you're safe.
I presume you do have an escape mechanism for us all.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. Any moment now. Just waiting on these other fine fellows to work out the tiny little details.
I have much to share with you, my friends. Let us do so in the comfort of safety.
Alma's going to try and join the rest of the group.
Let's all join up.
The only challenge with that, Alma, is that the searchlights on the incoming vessel are trained directly on you.
Okay. She does the freeze. If I don't move, it can't see me.
You can certainly use your duck and cover to quickly retreat and hide, but it would mean going back into the building.
Deep fake? Can I use deep fake? That's hide.
You can. Give it a roll.
Okay. It's with one wheel.
Remember not to look at the dice, too.
Just enough so I don't miss the dice tray.
Oh, there you go.
That was... Ooh. Oh, dear.
Oh. That's sounding excellent.
For such a stealthy wolf's head, an assassin, that's not the best of roles.
No.
From where I'm standing, I can see that the searchlights are on her, right? Because I'm right
above it. The ship is effectively using its searchlights to scan the building, and you can hear the excited chatter of a communicator go off in the office below, and hectic commentary muffled by the building's framework. You can still hear that there's clearly some kind of interchange between the ship and the custodians within.
Can I use a guardian tree on Alma?
Oh, thank you.
Unfortunately not, because she's now effectively just immediately below you, having tried to hide. She's in that storage room below, and you are on the roof above, holding the two bear cubs.
Take the cubs! I'll be fine.
The challenge we're having is we're all stuck on a roof and we're waiting for pickup, but if we shoot a flare, the ship's going to shoot us.
Kind of feels that way.
So Gigi is going to carve wave runes into the roof to protect everybody. That means we can shoot out, but they can't shoot in.
Oh, and brilliant.
Somebody needs to shoot a flare to signal the ship, and it's got a minute to pick us up, and then we run like hell.
It takes a minute to fire up. Yeah, okay. I guess I'd pull a flare out. I imagine ship captain, I would have a flare.
Ooh. We have one. You can have one of ours. Yeah, no problem.
Okay.
Leomi's down to 76 flares now.
That's crusty.
We've got it.
Okay. Soon. Oh, you're a flare trust fund baby. Got it.
Yeah. Well, one time we needed one and we didn't have one.
Just one.
It went quite badly. So
yeah, it's like lockpicks in Skyrim. Got it.
Yeah. Gigi, you etch the runes into the roof, creating a protective barrier against the fearsome and menacing dragon guns and howling dogs that bristle from the Norse ship that looms just beyond the observatory. And you feel quite secure that you are protected, and you may, if you wish, fire your own volleys back against the ship.
How far does a shaker shoot? A shaker that would have been acquired in our armory.
You have up to extreme range with that, so you could certainly blast away. This thing is not quite within touching distance, but you could even run at it with Bearpaw and strike it a blow. It would have to jump, but you know, it's that kind of distance.
Wait, that would be really cool.
Very much in your milieu.
Could the ship be considered a creature, yeah, and I can climb on it and put it at disadvantage?
No.
But we tried climb this angle already.
But I can climb on it. Gigi is going to draw Bearpaw and charge at this thing and jump on it.
That's so crazy.
Don't wait up for me!
Air would like to fire a Gandfly at the searchlight, because it doesn't have to roll to hit.
I feel like we're hitting our stride. I have an idea, guys. I think we should start the whole thing again from the beginning. We know what we're doing.
What?
We've done that, and that worked.
Just in case.
Like, all the way back to the very beginning.
So if that works, then that would be 2 points of damage to the searchlight.
Your Gandfly clinks against the glass of the searchlight, but doesn't reach the bulb, and perhaps scratches the surface. Negligible impact. Meanwhile, a bit like that scene from Dr. Strangelove, Gigi is riding the ship and presumably waving his hat with wild abandon as it does pirouette off into the night sky again in this kind of smooth, calculated arc, taking you with it. The protective runes that you carved in the rooftop remain behind, protecting your comrades while you wheel off into the night.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Stabbing at the cockpit, right? I'm trying to open, you know, open the cockpit like an oyster with Bearpaw.
I get the kind of, you know, using the ornate heirloom sword as a can opener.
And you can still hear him in the distance shouting.
The dragon gun trains on the observatory, and some of you are protected by the wave runes, which encompasses a large chunk, but the building itself and the whole edifice shudders as it takes a colossal amount of damage. Explodes in bright white light. You find yourself still protected by the wave runes, but standing in a smoking, charred ruin.
And loving.
So far, so good.
Give me a slight roll, G, with 5 words.
Just subtract six.
No, not yet. Total 12.
Okay, you manage to hold on with one hand tautly gripping the ship's carapace, trying to hang on for dear life as it tries to shake you loose. Mm. It rockets higher into the atmosphere.
Oh boy. Is the building still standing, or?
Charred remnants of it are. It was hit by a dragon gun shell. And while you were fortunately protected by those wave runes, you can see bits of charred paper, smoldering wood. Within an instant, the whole thing was demolished around you.
So are we just Looney Tunes style floating in the air, supported by the runes?
You've kind of descended a little bit to be part of the rubble, because wave runes doesn't give you levitation abilities.
Yeah.
But you, were it not for that, you would have suffered significant damage. Your flare has done the job of alerting Ragni and your crew to bring the Falkir to start its engines, and it is using its thrusters to emerge from the ice and power towards you. It will, within a few minutes, give you a platform on which to alight.
Can we see Gigi at this point?
Yeah.
You can see a rapidly vanishing ship ascending into the heavens with a bulky figure in peacock finery fluttering around him as he ascends ever higher into the thinning atmosphere.
Can we hear the echo of his shouts of glee? They echo off the mountains.
I was waiting for the ship to come back down because you'd hear him fighting with it. What would he need to roll in order to crack that thing open and come into your ship?
It's made of ironwood, that miracle material.
Don't start thinking small.
But there's a chance, right?
It's made of what? Ironwood, you said?
Made of ironwood, the kind of impervious material that enables these ships to traverse the Gugganunga Gap. Yeah, poking it open
so
with a...
right now with that question.
So, like a natural 20 then.
You need 32 wolves, CJ.
Yeah.
That wouldn't work. They can't breathe in space either.
Viomi looks sadly up into the sky and says, what will we ever do without the giant to run blindly in first?
I will wave to Gigi. A
possibly obvious question, but if the building's gone, I'm assuming Alma's gone too.
Oh.
It is impossible to tell where Alma is. She remained behind, hiding in the building below. It may well be that she is trapped in the rubble. It may well be that she has been blasted to smithereens. Only time will tell.
I think I would turn to the rest of the group and say, she told us to get out of here. If she survived that, she will be able to find us. We need to leave now.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, let's get the big man and go get him some breakfast. That's what we usually do in these situations.
With a thunderous ripple in the fabric of space-time, another void ship materializes, pulsating with energy that slowly dissipates into the night sky. A monolithic entity, a vessel that has cut through the cosmos like a seafarer through the northern seas. You are now faced with two ships against your Falcon.
I thought it was our ship.
No, there's no way it was our ship.
Yeah, time to go.
Air, jump on the other one.
Steve, Taylor, and Bill, if you can all give me a slight roll, Ragni, the pilot, positions the Falcon close enough for you to be able to leap into the extravehicular port, and there are crew members on hand to try and hoist you aboard should you fail.
I rolled a 10 plus 2, so I got a 12.
Okay, slightly. So I'm going to use Boon to roll twice and takes the best. That's 14.
And I'm also 14.
Okay, the trio of Alpha either reach their leafy limbs or their stony appendages and clamber aboard the extravehicular port. The bear cubs tossed ahead of you. Crapty holds desperately onto Leomi's long roots and hauls himself up and over the top of you, breathing a sigh of relief that he has made it to safety. Ragni then looks for instructions from you, Cole.
I would take just a beat to look at the other two, and then I'd turn and say, get us out of here now.
He says to you, to be clear, I'm activating thought and memory drive and flitting to safety.
We have to get the lunatic.
Yeah, how close is that ship?
The new arrival, a Drakkar, is incredibly close, and like I said, it has an impressive arsenal. The Imperial fleet's finest, and you have, after all, just invaded their military base.
Well, let's not quibble over who invaded who.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys can see me?
He'll be fine.
As a dimly receding figure entering the atmosphere, yes.
I'm still stabbing at it. Open up, you tin can! I've ridden wild boars with more gusto than you!
Cole, such is the weight of command. Mm-hmm. Heavy is the head that wears the crown. you will have to give the order to flit into orbit in escape.
Make it so. Flit.
The ship vanishes in a thick sea of black mystery, and you suddenly find yourself gazing at the immensity of stars above a blue and white sparkling jewel, a delicate sky blue sphere laced with slowly swirling veils of white. You realize you are high in orbit, high above Mother Eula.
We still see
him
riding the other. Yes,
that's, are we now above it? It's coming towards us.
Get him. Jump, Gigi.
Yes, fly, my friends. And remember, Griotgoth, the magnificent, in the Skald's song, the madman who laughed in the face of death.
The Vikings and Valkyries podcast is hammered together by a dedicated team of Skalds and Smiths. Please don't forget to like, share, and sacrifice to the old gods.
The rubble moves around, and first one paw comes out, then another one, and then it shakes off. She shakes off rubble and debris and goes, "We did it! Guys! Oh, they did it again.